Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, March 30, 2018. Ugandan authorities say cattle raiders from South Sudan attacked villages inside Uganda.
It has happened more than three times now. Those people of all the animals have driven is now more than 2,000 from Ugandan side.
And some Jonglei residents claim they were beaten and tortured by SPLA soldiers.
They got us in the market. I could hear before I was arrested was the sound of guns being cocked and around and sound of iron sheets being beaten. They asked us to lay down and we did after that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Residents of Gwari village in Moyo district in northern Uganda say heavily armed men from South Sudan raided their village over the past few months, stealing thousands of cattle, goats, sheep, and destroying property. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Moyo town in Uganda.
Moyo District's police chief and local residents from Gwari and the neighboring village of Padiga say armed cattle rustlers from South Sudan raided their villages in June 2017 and fled with about 660 herd of cattle. Yei River State's governor recently said Ugandan authorities notified him about heavily armed South Sudanese cattle raiders moving who had crossed into Uganda. Residents of Gwari and Padiga claim the South Sudanese raiders stole more than 450 herd of cattle in two separate incursions on villages in February. Dramani Festo, an elderly resident of Gwari village, says he lost all of his 15 cattle to South Sudanese raiders, which he says was his only source of income.
I am suffering now. I can no longer afford to pay school fees. My children are at home. I am starving. I have nothing to eat. I have a swollen feet, but I cannot buy medicine to treat it because I have nothing left. I used to depend on my cows.
Gwari community leader Karade James Dako says his people have paid a heavy price following multiple raids on his village.
People are being displaced. Children got lost. Still looking for children. People have left their houses. Eh? People have gone now to France or some to camp. Now, if these people are not comforted, I don't think that there will be really easy life.
Linus Kenyi is a chief of Kajukeji in South Sudan's Yei River State. Kenyi denies allegations by Ugandans that the South Sudan Army offered support to cattle rustlers and adds that residents of Kajukeji have suffered from cattle raids too.
The government of South Sudan is actually very seriously because this one is a barbaric act. It's not something good. And they're not also happy at all. Even if people talk that maybe they're not thinking, but they are very serious looking on the roads, where these cattle are going, and I'm sure these cattle will not cross to border.
Moyo District Police Commander Dennis Achirchan says cattle rustlers from South Sudan have been attacking communities along the South Sudan-Uganda border for some time.
It has happened more than three times now. Those people of all the animals have driven is now more than 2,000 from Ugandan side.
Dako says the cattle rustlers were accompanied by men in uniform and crossed into Gwari from Kajukeji.
These people come in a well-armed position, in a uniform. Even they come with the PKs. Then people were doubting if they are really people regarding rebel side or not, but they are being aided by the government.
Ochirchan says one officer with the Ugandan army was killed during fighting with the cattle raiders on February 21st.
For us, we are not like them always. We respect border. Much as for them, they are not respecting our border because they are coming deep in Uganda, 10 kilometers, 15, to raid our animals. But for us, We have left that one for our government to engage, which Kongswa they are doing it.
The Moyo District Police Chief says the Ugandan government has deployed additional troops to secure its porous border with South Sudan to protect the residents of Bari and neighboring villages who have been attacked by South Sudanese cattle raiders. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Moyo.
Residents in Mankaman of East Lake State are accusing SPLA soldiers of harassing and torturing civilians. The residents alleged soldiers deployed to the area to disarm civilians last week arrested at least 30 people and tortured an unknown number of civilians. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
One of the residents who prefers to be identified only as Makir for fear of retribution from the army says SPLA soldiers arrested and tortured him. Speaking in Dinka, Makir says he was later released after his area chief intervened.
They got us in the market. I could hear before I was arrested was the sound of guns being cocked and around and sound of iron sheets being beaten. They asked us to lay down, and we did. After that, they just started beating us, saying, bring the guns, bring the guns. I told them that I don't have any gun. They did not listen. They took us to the barrack where we were tortured.
Another resident is speaking in Dinka, who did not want to be identified for fear of reprisals, claims he too was tortured by SPLA soldiers.
We are supposed to be respected. Actually, we were beaten. Around four teachers were beaten in the morning, saying teachers. They carried guns like pistols where we should get guns. I am working as a teacher, and they were telling me that we are criminals. We criminals now. I am a criminal because I am teaching the children, and is that my crime?
Makir and Gavir say, aside from being tortured, the soldiers confiscated their money and mobile phones. Both Makir and Gavriel are asking the SPLA top leadership to intervene. Local Chief John Mariar says he and other chiefs spoke to SPLA commanders in the area and encouraged them to release the residents who were arrested. Speaking in Dinka, Mariar says they also asked the soldiers to give the chiefs time to convince some civilians to voluntarily surrender their guns.
It is not good now to keep gun with you if you are a civilian. What is happening now is not good. We want it to stop. If there is any, it has to be surrendered peacefully. That is what I have been telling the youth.
Mariar says the innocent civilians who have been arrested are, in his words, not fine and should be freed. Repeated calls made by this program to SPLA spokesperson Rul Roy Kwang and his deputy Santo Domit went unanswered. Jimmy Rehine, a commander of the SPLA soldiers conducting the disarmament exercise in the area, told local radio reporter Fola Moll of the Minkaman FM that the army has released the civilians who had been arrested. Commander Rehine says he will instruct his forces not to harass civilians. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
A civil society activist advocating for the rights of people with disabilities in South Sudan wants his group to be included in the peace talks to revive the collapsed 2015 peace agreement. Francis Agwek says disabled people suffer from discrimination, insecurity, and the country's economic crisis. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Francis Agwek Madut is the chairperson of the National Disabled People Organization in South Sudan. Madut had polio during his childhood and it affected both of his legs. He gets around on crutches. Madut says people with a disability like him are more vulnerable to insecurity and discrimination compared to other people in society. He says his group should be invited to peace negotiations so that any signed agreements include provisions that guarantee the rights of people living with disabilities in South Sudan.
In the current context of civil war, humanitarian crisis, insecurity and human rights violations in the country, persons with disabilities suffer the most. And so we need to be represented in the current peace talk going on in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, revitalization process. When people went, we were not having people representing us. And nobody spoke about us.
According to the 2008 population and housing census conducted by the Southern Sudan Center for Census Statistics and Evaluation, 5.1% of South Sudan's population suffered from some form of disability. That's between 400,000 and 600,000 people. Madud says the violence that erupted in 2013 affected millions of people, including the disabled. He says the disabled are poorly represented in parliament, the judiciary, and executive branches of government.
For example, the issue of employment. Disabled people are, though they are educated because they have people who have masters, even PhD holder, people have negative attitude toward them. They think that disability is like also inability, but it is not. Most of the people are now roaming around the street. They have no work because people have bad attitude, negative attitude toward them.
Madud says the disabled should be provided additional protection during the ongoing conflict, but there is none.
You find, even I got a call from one of disabled women who was being raped in Wau. So people take advantage on them because they are not able now to defend themselves.
Deng Dao Deng is the chairman of the Commission for War Disabled, Widows and Orphans, and a member of South Sudan's National Legislative Assembly representing Twitch East County in Jonglei State. Deng says his appointment to parliament was purely on the SPLM ticket and not based on a provision to represent disabled people.
There are people with a disability that we have recommended and they were appointed to the parliament. The number may not be sufficient enough. I don't remember the number, but it is very few. When you talk of 400 and you are to really represent the disabled, 10% of those groups should be people with special needs.
Deng says disabled people have the right to be included in negotiations over the search for peace in South Sudan.
The call and the quest for the disabled person on their inclusions in the talks is their absolutely right. They are citizens of this country and they are entitled for their inclusion in the talks so that they express their opinions.
According to the 2008 census, former Western Equatoria, Central Equatoria and Upper Nile states are areas with high numbers of people with disabilities. Other states with a slightly higher prevalence were Unity and Western Bahr Ghazal states. Deng says the government does not have an updated record of disabled people in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
Christians around the world are observing Good Friday, marking the crucifixion of Jesus. Robert Berger reports for VOA on events in Jerusalem where the faithful carried out an ancient Holy Land tradition.
Pilgrims from around the world packed into the narrow cobblestone alleyways of the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem's Old City to take part in the traditional Good Friday procession. Singing hymns and reading passages from the Bible, they retraced the footsteps of Jesus to the 14 stations of the cross. Gary Osterberg is from Canada.
Oh, it's an honor to be in this land like this. It's been great. It helps with my belief, it helps with my faith, it helps with everything.
In the Holy Land, religion and politics are never far apart. The Easter holidays come 6 weeks before the United States plans to move its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
I think that the Americans moving the embassy to Jerusalem is the right thing to do. I think it's the proper thing to do. And I wish that Canada would follow suit and do the same thing also, move the Canadian embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Palestinians are furious over the embassy move and U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Imad, a shopkeeper in the Arab Bazaar, said Jerusalem is the future capital of a Palestinian state.
I do not expect anything from Donald Trump, so I expect bad things. This is, you know, part of what they are doing against Palestinians. Another step, another thing which will hurt Palestinians.
Jewish pilgrims also flock to Jerusalem to celebrate the start of the week-long biblical holiday of Passover. Rabbis here say the U.S. Embassy move reinforces the Passover theme of Jerusalem rebuilt. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Japan donates money to help aid agencies in South Sudan. We'll bring details on that story right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite cultural tradition and why?
When in the evening, people used to sit together when we were small. Elders, you know, in the evening, they share stories. You know, they tell us past histories. They tell us events that happened during their period, during their time.
What I love about the tradition of the Hausas or Fulanis is the way they wear their clothes. The clothes we use, the atamfaya. There's this Asian tradition of the Hausas, it's like two different wrappers, you tie one and you cover up yourself with one. I love that one.
I love my culture, and so all activities, I like them. So there's no particular one I can say I like and this one I don't like. So there's no favorite.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The government of Japan has donated $1 million to help humanitarian mine action program in South Sudan. A Japanese diplomat in Juba says decades of civil war and continued conflict has littered vast areas of South Sudan with explosive hazards. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Juba.
Japan's deputy chief of mission in South Sudan, Shigeru Hamano, says the donation is part of a $34 million assistance package Japan is giving South Sudan. Ambassador Hamano says Japan would like to encourage communities across South Sudan to return to their villages and work on their farmlands, and says they only can do that if they are safe.
Most of South Sudanese are farmers or agri-pastoralists engaging in agriculture. The presence of those, you know, explosive remnants of war on the ground is a big, threat for their safety and also serious, you know, stumbling blocks for agricultural development. That's why we decided to lend a helping hand with South Sudanese people in this field through UMMAS.
Over the past 6 years, Japan has contributed over $14 million to demining operations in South Sudan. An estimated 6.3 million people in South Sudan, or half of the population, now live in counties where their safety is threatened by presence of landmines and explosive remnants of war. Hamano says the ongoing conflict has affected millions of South Sudanese who are not able to feed themselves.
The humanitarian crisis is going on. It is being aggravated. Although the government is trying to make its utmost effort to stop it with the cooperation of the international organizations and partners. But, of course, the situation is dire.
Richard Bolter is the UNMAS officer in Juba. Bolter says the Japanese donation will help his office clear more landmines and continue its mine risk awareness campaign in communities across South Sudan. He says the continued use of rockets, grenades, and mortars by the warring parties has hindered the safe movement of civilians' population as well as the work of humanitarian workers.
Ordnance is a problem. It stops them farming. It hinders people gathering firewood. It stops their kids going to school. It impacts in all manner of their lives, and it hinders aid agencies delivering assistance.
The UNMAS Mine Action Service says for the last 11 months, the organization have recorded 62 incidences across the country, including 6 dead in the Upper Nile region and 56 injured citizens, 12 female and 44 male. Bolter says there is no new evidence of mines laid by warring parties in South Sudan, but other unexploded ordnance remain a challenge for aid agencies working in the country.
They want to feed people, they want to help people, they want to educate them. But there are obstacles, and one of the obstacles is the legacy of the former and the ongoing conflict. And people, all these agencies have a duty of care to their staff and to the people they're trying to assist. And there's a requirement to make sure that where people are planning their activities, they're doing it on safe ground rather than dangerous ground.
Both Hamano and Bolta urge the warring parties in South Sudan to stop fighting so peace and stability can be achieved and aid agencies can implement other developmental projects across the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Zimbabwe, where Pastor Evan Mwarari was a vocal critic of former President Robert Mugabe. Now, he has decided to run in local government elections this year and possibly seek the job of mayor of Zimbabwe's biggest city. Sebastian Maofu reports for VOA from Harare.
From pulpit to politics, Pastor Evan Mawarire is wading into the electoral fray in Zimbabwe. He and other independent candidates have joined forces to run for local government posts in the coming elections. They call their coalition the People's Own Voice. Mawarire has his eye on the mayor's seat in Harare should he win local government elections. He spoke to VOA.
Up to today, we still deliver very dirty and very dangerous water to the residents of Harare. We have got potholes. Our road network is completely dilapidated and needs to be revived again. We have issues in the city that have to do with refuse collection. We still don't collect our refuse for people, and that encourages all sorts of diseases. And I think we those are the kind of things that my generation feels urgently.
Mawarire rose to prominence in 2016 as the activist behind the This Flag movement that organized protests against rights abuses by the government and former President Robert Mugabe's handling of the ailing economy. He was jailed several times. He was later acquitted on some charges of subversion, while others are still pending in court. The polls expected this July and August will be the country's first without Mugabe, who resigned under military pressure last year. Analysts say Mawarire's entry into politics could spell trouble for the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change. The MDC has struggled with internal divisions following the recent death of founder Morgan Tsvangirai. Word is that the MDC has already reached out Mawarire for talks, though VOA could not confirm that information. Sekai Holland, a former senior member of the MDC, welcomed Mawarire to politics. She did not indicate where her allegiances now lie.
The effort that Pastor Mawarire is launching with his colleagues is very significant. It's middle class African kids whose absence from politics has caused many problems. Their coming in strengthens the processes of development, and it's important that they themselves understand that they are part of the fabric and not an independent formation, so they should dialogue with everybody.
Last year, Kenya saw a surge in the number of independent candidates in its nationwide elections. Among them was the activist Boniface Mwangi, who ran for parliament. He was in Harare for the launch of Mawarire's movement.
It's very key because independent candidates are not part of any political party. They're not politically aligned, so they don't have any baggage. But they also have a voice, and they take a stand because they want to reclaim back their country. So it's very commendable that people have come together. So, and the other thing is actually when they are independent, that means they don't support any side, especially presidential elections. So which means they're able to get votes from both Chamisa and crocodile voters.
He is referring to the two expected front runners in the coming presidential elections. Current President Emmerson Mnangagwa, or the Crocodile as he is known, will carry the mantle of the ruling ZANU-PF party. The MDC is expected to put forward its acting leader, Nelson Chamisa. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Still on politics, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi will be the winner of Egypt's presidential election. He faced no challenger after forcing credible candidates out of the race. VOA's Mohammed Ashenawi spoke to Said Sadiq, a professor of political sociology at American University, about Sisi's second term.
If we look at the result of the election, there are two things that we should keep in mind. Why there was such a high number of deliberately invalidated votes, over a million? Secondly, those who voted for his opponent, who had no chance whatsoever that he would win anything. So, and we knew it. I mean, you are voting for someone you know very well is not going to make it. If you combine those two factors, the invalid vote and vote for his opponent, this is a symbolic message to the president that some people in the population are not happy with his economic policy or some aspect of his policy. I think this is coming from people who supported Sisi from the beginning and feel disappointed with some of his policies. And this is the way they are expressing their position.
On April 2nd, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is expected to emerge as the winner of the 2018 presidential elections in Egypt. Critics said he crippled opposition and closed off the political space. What do you expect to take place in Egypt during Sisi's second term?
I think Sisi has many items on his agenda for the second term. The first item is the issue that he had failed to resolve terrorism. He had been able only to contain terrorism in North Sinai, but not able to finish the job. And up till today, this is a big issue because it had a big impact on tourism. The tourism sector has 4 million people working. The tourism sector had been affected, and that affected the entire economy. Second issue, the issue of Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, because this also affects Egyptian agriculture, Egyptian development. This has to be addressed. I don't think democracy is on his mind in the second term. I think he had survived and he had taken a green light from regional power, international power, that the priority is stabilizing Egypt. They are also turning a blind eye to the issue of democratization and human rights.
But U.S. Congress is linking U.S. aid to Egypt to progress on human rights and political reform. Would President Sisi open the political space and free the Egyptian media in his second term?
I don't think this is also going to affect him anyway. He has a lot of money from the Gulf states. He feels that he has the White House. President Trump called him a fantastic guy. $300 million will not be the tipping point that will make Sisi change his mind. He has a mission, and the mission is to restore the strong state, authoritarian state. He doesn't want to see any revolution again. He made this statement that what happened 7 years ago will not happen again. In fact, the building of the new capital is a defensive capital in which you'll have only the rich. Institutions are well protected. So the revolution that we have seen, crowds besieging the Ministry of Defense and Interior and the Presidential Palace, would never happen again in the new security setting. Mind you, many people, not only in Egypt, but in the Middle East, began to see the issue of Western democratization model as fake, because they have seen what happened to Iraq under the name of getting rid of a dictator and putting democracy in Iraq, Libya, the destruction of the Syrian state. All these things give Western democracy a very negative image. And this is a problem. And this is also the discourse that his media are using to continue and back this regime.
That's Said Sadiq, professor of political sociology at American University in Cairo. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed Al-Ashenawi from Cairo. That brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, and we hope you have a peaceful weekend. Let's know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.